Let's return to This Week in America. Here's your host, Rick Bratton.
Welcome back, everybody. Coast to Coast, This Week in America. Run In My Shoes by Philip Bell Jr. is a chronological, historical account regarding the political and social economic reasons concerning the development of racism in American history. Philip grew up during the turbulent 60s civil rights struggles regarding the black-white divide. He highlights his personal social experiment of being the third African-American to integrate St. Stephen's School, an elite all-white male college preparatory school in the state of Virginia, during the late 60s. Phil is a seasoned advocate and entrepreneur who supports at-risk children through the Bell Metropolitan Educational Achievement Club, Incorporated. Amid challenges like COVID-19, he focuses on virtual education, offering tailored sociological and historical insights. And Philip Bell Jr., Master of Arts, author of Run In My Shoes, The Journey of Understanding Race and Prejudice in America, as seen by an African-American, is our guest on This Week in America. Philip, welcome to the program. A pleasure to have you with us.
Thank you very much, Rick, for inviting me to be on the program. I'm very much looking forward to it.
It's a very important conversation, and I thank you so much for taking time to be with us on the program. The book, Run In My Shoes, give you information as we go through where the book's available and Philip's website as well. What were the influences on why you decided to write Run In My Shoes? What was the inspiration?
Well, in the very beginning, leaving high school, going into the college years, I started my college years at Howard University. And it was apparent to me after taking a few classes in sociology or history that the information on Black history was a little bit different from what I had been taught, you know, throughout the basic years before I entered college. And I became very interested in it. And really what got my attention was there were white professors who were doing the research and coming up with, the originators of architecture or the originators of education started in parts of Africa. And that just got my attention. And I kind of just went into it as much as I could to uncover as much as I could how this all became the mistake and what they were being taught or what we were being told. So that's kind of was the beginning of my influence on it. It wasn't anything other than just becoming very aware that some things we were taught were just not accurate. And so I wanted to go into it even more.
You do an excellent job in laying the groundwork. Our guest on the program is Philip Bell Jr. His book is Run In My Shoes, The Journey of Understanding Race and Prejudice in America as Seen by an African-American. Book available wherever books are sold. Philip's website is philbelljr.com. All of this on our website, thisweekinamerica.us. Who are you trying to influence with Run In My Shoes? Who do you hope reads the book?
Well, historians, people that are very interested in the truth and reality of development of our civilization. I guess more or less people that were looking for facts. And with race always being a very important topic in this country, I think I was trying to touch upon a little bit of everybody.
And you do, and the themes of the book, as we'll talk about during the conversation, are very important. Getting the message out is very important to Philip, author of Run In My Shoes. You did updates to the original Run In My Shoes. In fact, you did that twice and relaunched with your third edition. Talk about the decision to do that and what you did in those relaunches.
Well, I wanted to relaunch Run In My Shoes the second time was because primarily we were in a phase of where things were starting to happen in our country and the relevance of the truth wasn't, in my opinion, being looked at. So I just began, especially it was an incident in Georgia, a personal incident that I had to go through and being arrested, pulled over, for no reason, and a white cop in Georgia asked me to get out of the car, and I'm like, well, why? and his whole thing was, you know, you're trafficking drugs. So that in itself was cause enough for me to want to further strengthen the fact that if it can happen to me, it may happen to almost anybody, particularly young Black males or Black people in general. And we went through a phase of driving while Black, being pulled over, even on Sunday best clothes, you know, people could be pulled over and just, you know, given the riot act by someone who's accusing you of something that you didn't do. So that was one of the aspects. And then the latest information that you're asking me for has to do with Florida. Just I moved there, you know, I was trying to stay as fit as I could. So living in Florida, I thought would give me an advantage to that. But then they began to change rules and laws about what you could teach from an educational standpoint. And so therefore I wasn't going to sit back and be arrested for teaching information. So that was like maybe the incentive for me at this last phase, this third edition, to include what I was feeling, seeing, and wanted to articulate to people what they may be looking at in terms of what does it mean? What does all of this mean? Have we seen it before? Are there cycles that come and go in our country where people become more negative about each other rather than more positive about each other?
Boy, you said so much there. I want to go back to your background, an educator for 30-plus years. How has that changed, being an educator, being able to go into a classroom and teach students? You mentioned what's going on in Florida. I live in Florida. I've seen what's going on in Florida. And there's a filter now for the teachers. In fact, some teachers have even talked about having to wear cameras in the classroom so they can be monitored as to what they're teaching. How has that changed over the 30 years?
Well, when I was growing up in the generation of high school through college and all, it was very, I would guess, pushed in a positive way to uncover truths. Yes. In education. I mean, that was a positive. But as you may be able to see now, and I know it comes to my attention, that certain people want only certain things taught and controlled. Even one of my favorite subjects is religion, by the way. And, you know, when you go into an environment where you're just told you can only teach this element of religion when you were given the opportunity, like at a St. Stephen's or an Ireton, to be analytical, to examine, to find an analysis that would give truth rather than just indoctrination. So I began to see not only in history was being changed, but the indoctrination process about what you could learn and behave like when it came to religion.
Is that part of teaching, of being a student? You give them information. The student, you talk about that analytical phase that you go through. As a student, and I recall I'm getting so much information from teachers, and it was sort of, in my mind, I could sort of form my own opinions based on what they told me. Are we taking that ability away from students now by giving them one side? And basically, you use the word indoctrination, and I'm not sure that's incorrect.
Well, you know, Rick, I can honestly say that I'm one individual and my perceptions may not be what another person's perceptions are, but I think I've learned enough to have the tools to discern that indoctrination is not education. And so education is much, much more richer and important in the lives that we have and in our world that we live in. And there are people that nowadays have become experts in indoctrination. And one further thing I want to say, I hope I'm in the right column of what you're going to ask, but my life was an example of perhaps what a lot of people or you may go through in terms of their education. And I just looked at it from the standpoint of, if it can happen to me, it can happen to you. And I know better as far as like indoctrination and those kinds of things. And so how easily influenced people are when it comes down to being taught and what they believe and what they go away with. in terms of their education. And it could be very dangerous. But I've run into mostly positives when it comes to education and socialization. But there have been, you know, some, like I said, the situation in Georgia. You know, I've worked with personnel who have, you know, tried their best to destroy you, you know, simply because you're outspoken, you're different, you know, and you don't mind giving an opinion. It's just an opinion. You know, you can look it up and find out for yourself whether it's right or wrong. So I think for the youth today going through education, they're at a disadvantage when you run into situations where you cannot provide the freedom and the educational freedom to look at all areas and rather than just one specific area.
Philip Bell Jr. is our guest on the program. His book is Run in My Shoes, The Journey of Understanding Race and Prejudice in America as Seen by an African American. The book available wherever books are sold. Philip's website is Phil, P-H-I-L-B-E-L-L Jr.com, philbeltjr.com. A link on our website, thisweekinamerica.us. Let's go back and talk a little bit about your educational experiences. They were really crucial in developing who you are as a person. Talk about those experiences and the influences they had on you.
Well, I'll say two things right off the bat. Integration without a proper level of assimilation of what the society, the culture is trying to produce, I think you're just not going to get the results unless you have that process of assimilation. And that is, I remember as a professor at a Florida Tech that I just randomly asked questions to a large Hispanic population, oftentimes which made up of the, which made the student body generally. And I'll give you an example. I said, well, can you define who Adolf Hitler was? And nobody had a clue. So like, wait a minute, this is one of the most important historical periods in our existence. We fought a major war over something like this, and you don't have a clue? We're in a little bit of a disconnect. So that's an example of what I'm trying to say, where I began to say, look, we can do a better in terms of preparing our students and making sure everybody's on the same page. But let's go back to the past. I attended St. Stephen's School, St. Joseph, before I went to St. Stephen's. And let me just stop right there. I felt that St. Stephen's, the student body, the young people that I met, I could go down the list of over 100. I can't actually do that. But there were students there that really could have made, or what I say, make or break a person's personality. And St. Stephen's was a place where my personality was developed and nurtured and given the freedom to express myself in so many areas. I will always remember those students, and I will always remember that experience. And then finally, being at the same period of time in the 60s and 70s, Alexandria, the city of Alexandria, Virginia, was going through a race relations developmental changeover was an important factor when I attended that school. And it also had ladies, females, that attended the school. So I got a gender assimilation, integration process at that point. But I think Alexandria, like as a whole, was a great place. But St. Stephen's at that time stood out in terms of making sure that I became a holistic person. I not only participated in sports, but the level of education was always paramount. As a matter of fact, it was this system of letting your parents know when you weren't doing too well. And so you were always on the hot seat, but it was the most positive educational experience. And I thank the people that were around me, the youth and the parents who groomed them, to not belittle me or to destroy my personality like it could have. I realize now that could have happened.
In your chapter in the book, Run in My Shoes, the chapter Passing the Torch, you talk about the influence your father had on you, your ambitions, again, molding who you are today. Talk about that chapter and the role of your father.
Well, I was lucky enough to be born in Alexandria again. Lived on Boyle Street, for those who are aware where Alexandria is, about two or three blocks from the Masonic Temple in Alexandria. My dad was a African-American who, I guess, for the few generations that were integrated into the American military, he had that experience. He also had experience as a very young man in the area of the funeral business. So I, of course, every child looks up to their parent, you know, as if they're the best parent. I mean, you don't really know compared to others, but my dad gave me a sense of how to have a work ethic. That was important to him, and he had a business mind, and he had a business look. And again, he was one of the very first people who was driving limousines in the neighborhood, which kind of made it look like, oh, they must have a little bit of money or something.
Yes.
So I had all that support, but my father always taught us as well, is that you support your family. Our grandmothers, my great and grandmother, both lived with us, and we had such a wonderful level of love and nurturing. And then also next door across the driveway were my aunts and uncles. So I never felt left out, abandoned, without love. And even when things got up or down, there was always someone that you could go to in a positive way. I don't think young people today have all of that going for themselves. So a lot of times they run into issues. But it was Alexandria, my father working as a funeral director and teaching me the ropes of being a man was just unbelievably valuable for me as I developed growing older. And even to this day, he was a pragmatist. He would always tell me, boy, I'm not going to be with you always. You know, he said, pay attention, pay attention. And so he passed away in 2016. And my mom passed away in 2024, I'm sorry.
It's such an important story that Philip tells in his book, Run in My Shoes, The Journey of Understanding Race and Prejudice in America, as seen by an African-American. His website is philbelljr.com. A book available, of course, Amazon, Barnes & Noble, the usual places. And if you go to our website, you can click on directly to Philip's website, get information, order the book there as well. Boy, time is going by so quickly, so much to talk about. The book is so well done. Each chapter is extremely important in understanding where we've been, where we're going. And let's talk about that briefly. The American race relations, how have they changed over the course of the last several presidencies, sort of recent history? You've got Barack Obama, Donald Trump, and Joe Biden. How have race relations changed during those three presidencies?
Well, it's obvious that the word went out when Obama was elected the first black president that he was going to be a one-term president. And it became apparent that our American political system doesn't really work based on what a person can accomplish other than it's based on what group you belong to. I think that's what's becoming the process. It's not how smart or how competent or how your leadership skills will impact all of us. It's become control and how that those leaders will be selected to help particular groups at times. So I think it all kind of started with Obama's presidency, the divisive language and the anti-democratic type of language. Because when I was growing up, and particularly at St. Stephen's and T.C. Williams, we had the best debates and discussions on things, and nobody got off, you know, went off. It was just teachers had, we're going to debate, we're going to talk, we're going to try to find, you know, truth. And that was the process, looking for truth. I don't think that is exactly what is going on in the world today. And that's going to affect us in so many ways. In particular, one of my pet issues today is the climate change. And
yes.
if you look back, I mean, 20 years ago, I was saying, look, we need to spend some time on racism, y'all, because I can see this thing becoming unglued. We got too many people assimilating and not enough people being integrated through the assimilation. But now we got a problem with knowing that we got to make some serious changes if we're going to survive on our planet. We don't have to be Buck Rogers or Flash Gordon. I mean, let's just look at it for real. We have some serious decisions to make. So that's kind of the way where I am now. It's how you can be at one phase and know that something needs to correction. And now we're at another phase that if we don't correct it, it may cost us all our ability to survive.
The scientific evidence seems, at least to me, overwhelming. When did this become a political issue? How did this become a political issue? If you're on one side, you feel this way. If you're on the other side, you're supposed to feel the other way. Meanwhile, it gets hotter. The impact, the toll on people, on the economy is increasing each year. How did it get political?
Because the money made from energy gave rise to denial. And since that denial occurred, and then some people would say, well, I'll be your messenger for denial. Just pay me whatever you want to pay me, and I'll go out there and tell the whole world that everybody who says something about climate is some kind of bimbo, somebody that's not fully all there. And yeah, in the beginning, I used to tell people about climate change, and they tell me, "Oh, not in our time. It'll be like 100, 200 years from now."
Yes.
I'm like, I don't understand your science. And let me tell you this too: I first became aware of climate change when I was going to St. Stephen's. My teachers, Mr. Thompson, Mr. Berg, Mr. Soles, they were the ones telling us back in the day, in the 60s and 70s, this was going to take place. So that's what groomed me to be open-minded, because of the influence of my great teachers in that time of my life.
The role of the teacher is so important. As I mentioned, Philip has been an educator for over 30-plus years. The book is so well done, Run in My Shoes. It has a truthful understanding of history, crucial for dismantling racial prejudices and fostering inclusivity and profit-driven motives that he just talked about. All of this is in Philip's book. A few minutes left here. Let's talk about activism today. You went through a period of activism in this country that got results. Talk about where we are today, young adults, present, and the future, and their role in making changes in society.
Well, today's young people remind me a lot of the 60s and 70s young people in a variety of ways. But the 60s and 70s revolution of young people sort of went by the wayside and became more and more less vocal and less combative, because they were trying to get along and go through life, I'm sure, and just deal with what they had to deal with. But today's young people, I honestly am so glad I was born in 1957 and not 1987, for instance. They know, a lot of them, not all of them, of course, but they have an awareness of how serious it is for their world and their survival, rather than just going along with the status quo, I think. And so they're going to be willing to stand up for their world, their earth, that they can maintain it. And they just want some of the fuddy-duddies who don't want to make the change because they're comfortable where they are and they think they still got years and years to go. Just like the crack epidemic, I don't want to change gears that quick on you, but there were a lot of people when crack hit, they were like, no big deal. And then it just almost, wiped out a bunch of people.
Yes.
Or this fentanyl, all of this stuff. You got to really attack things when they come at you. You can't, push it off and think that it's going to go away on its own. It doesn't work like that. So, again, with climate change, they got to deal with that. Then they got to deal with the meltdown of our ice caps and different things that will emit methane into the atmosphere, which is going to even heat up more. I was reading this morning about the Great Lake melting away and leaving this level of salt, which is going to be even greater issues for our atmosphere. So piece. I think the young people, maybe they may be missing some components of a 100% life, but they are certainly a lot better than the last 20 years generation, I believe, in addressing the realities of their existence. And if they don't get help soon, I'm not sure what's going to happen at this point. But it's an existential issue that they're facing, and they realize that. Yes, sir.
I'd like to take a minute here. You mentioned Driving While Black. We went through that period, and I would like to think we've advanced beyond that. Have we? Is it still Driving While Black? Is that still an issue?
My honest opinion, you see, there are some really good policemen, really good policemen. I got, I know my car broke down once in South Carolina, and this policeman drove up on me. He stayed with me until the tow truck came. I mean, he was just the kind of person you would like, man, that's what a real dude is.
Yes.
And then I told you about the situation in Georgia. I wasn't doing anything. And I got pulled over and taken through the whole nine, and it was frightening. Taken to jail and, you know, I had to go through process in order to get out. That was frightening. That was a terrible, you know, situation. So all I can say is when there are periods and places where Black people just aren't welcome. I mean, and that's because we've been taught this race thing all upside down backwards, where there's only one race, the human race. Let's get that right. There's no white race. There's no Black race. We're all birthed from the Black, darker people from Africa who spread throughout the world. And then lightness became a part of their skin complexion. Big deal. Let's call each other what we are, Americans, or whatever your nationality may be. That's who we are, and that's how I identify myself 9 times out of 10. But you will experience prejudice, which has painted skin color as a determiner of how you're treated in many, many places.
It's an important book, Run in My Shoes, The Journey of Understanding Race and Prejudice in America, as seen by an African-American, Philip Bell, the author and our guest on the program. I mentioned how he's influenced lives as an educator. You're touching lives now, at-risk children in particular, through the Bell Metropolitan Educational Achievement Club. Just talk briefly about that, how important that is to you and the role you're playing in shaping a whole new generation.
Well, there have been a number of youth that have developed in a positive way that were headed in a negative way before, you know, I and my program gave them an opportunity to learn greater skills in order to stay out of trouble and to improve their lives and where they were trying to go in terms of a vocation. So I just kind of like, again, took some of the things that I had learned from all of the educational programming that I had gone through and said if, and then also my major was psychology and history. And I think all of those components put together, it allowed me to formulate a true program, not just something off the top of my head, but in a sense of how it works from a methodical experimental process, just like for any science experiment. So I think that was a positive. And then I also had, I utilized horses in the program, which was a big deal. I knew it was going to be a big deal, but I had mentored a third generation drug dealer out of Washington, D.C., a notorious. And he had survived the high intensity program lecture series that the courts had asked me to provide for these kids. Now, it was about 5 to start off with, and only one survived, actually, wasn't murdered or wasn't, you know, returned to imprisonment or whatever. So I took this kid on a retreat. It included horseback riding, by the way. So on the way back, we stopped, and he got on the horse. He was so afraid, but he got on the horse. And I think his fear caused the horse to just take off. Oh, my God. I was like, oh, my God, my program is dead in the water. So we formed a little posse to go look for him. And then when we found him, he had the biggest grin on his face. And I'm like, oh, don't you think, don't you know, we almost thought you were dead. He was like, Bell, Bell, if I had this opportunity growing up, I'd have never been doing drugs and dealing drugs. I was like, oh, light bulb went off right away. Boom. Yes. Let's get some horses then. So that became the crutch of Bell Meek, but also good advice. Like I said, true advice, true knowledge, positive role modelship. All of that, it goes into the formation of a scientific way of trying to deal with behavioral change.
Still Touching Lives, Philip Bell Jr., our guest on the program. Philip, a pleasure having you on the program. So much more we can talk about it. Hopefully we can do this again. Thank you for being with us on the program.
Thank you so much, Rick. Great, great opportunity for me. I appreciate it.
An important message, and we're proud to be able to include you in the guest of our programs, and you'll find information on Philip. His website is Phil, P-H-I-L, Bell, B-E-L-L, junior.com. I'd like to thank Leap Right Literary for arranging our conversation with Philip today. The book, of course, available wherever books are sold, Run In My Shoes, The Journey of Understanding Race and Prejudice in America, as seen by an African-American. A link for Phil's website on our website, thisweekinamerica.us. And you are listening to This Week in America, back on today's program, right after these messages.
You're listening to This Week in America with Rick Bratton. More after this.